Welcome to the Natcha Healing Show. Keep it Natcha, be the Natcha Healing Show.
Hello, you are listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan. I'm a medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out more about me and my work at CatherineKerrigan.com and UnlimitedEnergyNow.com. While you're there, definitely sign up for my newsletter, which is available now on Substack. Now, our guest today is Robert Dale Rogers, and I have to say one of the things that I personally love about interviewing experts from all over the world is I get to learn something every week, and hopefully you're as excited as I am about learning something new about natural healing. Now, Robert Dale Rogers has been an herbalist for over 50 years. Now, I've only done my work in natural healing for 32 years. He's been an herbalist for over 50 years, and he's published more than 60 books. I've only done 10. So we have a lot to learn from Robert Dale Rogers. His book is that we're talking about today is The Fern Pharmacy, Indigenous Wisdom and Modern Pharmacology. Welcome, Robert Dale Rogers.
No, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
And everyone, you can find out more about Robert Dale Rogers and his wonderful work at his website, selfhealdistributing.com. So Robert Dale Rogers, I'm excited to interview you because so many people, we know about mushrooms, we know about adaptogens, we know about flower essences and homeopathy, but ferns. So how did you get interested in ferns for natural healing?
Well, it goes way back. When I was a child, I grew up in St. John, New Brunswick. And in that river valley, there were what were known in those days as fiddleheads. And they actually became a commercial product that, you know, was frozen and sent around the world. And my dad used to take me out and we would pick them and enjoy them and like them. They're very tasty and they're also medicinal. We can talk about that later. But back in the mid 70s, I was up in northern Alberta, way up north, and was walking through the woods and there was a whole patch of them. And so I picked some, took them home. And at that time, I had finished a bachelor degree at the university and I was interested in plants and mushrooms and things. And didn't have any money. You know, I was like, had a log cabin and had to haul water and all that kind of thing. And didn't have any money. And so the next spring, a friend and I, we picked 600 pounds of these fiddleheads and sold them to a local grocery chain. And that started my interest in fiddleheads and wrote a little cookbook about them and things like that. Yeah.
So you're a fiddlehead fern distributor, a fiddlehead fern entrepreneur. I love that.
Yeah, I started way back. There's an industry now in Western Canada, but I was the first in Alberta for sure. Yeah.
So cool. All right. So I am a gardener and in my garden, I've got fiddlehead ferns. Also, in my healing room, I've got orchids. I've got loads of orchids. And as you know, different plants have different therapeutic properties. I'm a huge fan of flower essences made from orchids.
Mm-hmm.
And things about orchids is that they are the most evolved plants on the face of the earth. Whereas the ferns, my understanding, are pretty much like they were at the time of the dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, even before that. In fact, it's interesting you mention that. I mean, halfway through my next book, which is on medicinal orchids, you might find that very interesting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I definitely want to hear about that. I'm all about the orchids. So I'm all about orchids and I raise orchids, love orchids. And yet I have these beautiful fiddlehead ferns in my garden. in my organic garden. And I just want to stress that because so many people think they've got to pour loads of chemicals on their garden in order to have a beautiful garden. And that is far from the case.
That's not, yeah, exactly. I have ferns in my garden as well, fiddlehead, and I have some Japanese ferns that are fairly hardy to zone three, which is up north here. But they're considered primitive. And in fact, Rudolf Steiner, who is, the father of anthroposophy and things like that, Waldorf school, biodynamic gardening, all that, he actually said that, he considered them to be primitive, that they weren't evolving like orchids. And I disagree with them. I think ferns, which evolved 300, 400 million years ago, way before dinosaurs, although dinosaurs used to munch on them, they would actually were perfect. They were successful, and they've continued to be successful. So why would they evolve when everything's working for them? They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, and even since we started this by talking about gardening, so my fiddlehead ferns in my garden, they've been in one spot maybe like 20 years, and they're happy there. They get bigger, but they're, it's sort of like we're happy, we're content, whereas other plants tend to come and go or need different things. So tell us. You have written this book called The Fern Pharmacy. How were ferns used traditionally for therapeutic benefits?
Jay, well, all over the world, really. I concentrate a bit on ferns of my part of the world, particularly in British Columbia. Alberta is a bit of a dry climate, although we have about, I don't know, 15 species. But to the west of me, on the other side of the Rockies, they get huge. And down the Pacific Northwest, they get quite large. I'm excited. I'm going in November. I'm flying down to New Zealand to take some pictures of tree ferns, which are up to 60 feet tall, right? And several feet in diameter, the stem. So they're tree ferns, really. And so they've been used all over the world by indigenous people for everything from foods. They should be cooked for food, whether it's the frond above ground or the root down below the bulb, and they've been used for medicine for everything you can imagine, including a lot of our chronic diseases that are afflicting us today.
So fascinating. So, and again, I've done a number of interviews about the therapeutic values of mushrooms, but not about ferns. So, are ferns available? Do ferns grow on all the continents all over the world?
Yes, they do. In fact, there's a fern that grows very close to Antarctica, but not on one of the islands close to, but not on actually Antarctica. And speaking of mushrooms, my most well-known book is called The Fungal Pharmacy, Medicinal Mushrooms. And that's why I use the alliteration of the fern pharmacy just to remind my previous readers that there's another book out.
Yeah, o only 60 books, right?
Just over 60, yeah.
Amazing. So, what is there a connection between mushrooms and ferns other than that they're plants that grow outside in the forest?
Very sort of. Some of the ferns actually are what they would call mycorrhizal. That is, that some mushroom connection to the ferns, not all of them, but some ferns actually make use of the fact that the mycelium would provide water and nutrients to the fern in exchange for the sugars it needs to continue its life cycle. So there's a mutual beneficial relationship going on there.
So symbiotic in nature, and are there native medicines that are made using both ferns and mushrooms?
Not to my awareness of the mushrooms that are associated with ferns, but of course, mushrooms are, a powerful medicinal and gaining in popularity. Medicinal mushrooms. If you'll notice my t-shirt, I'll just go up a little bit here.
Make spores, not wars.
I'm a scientific advisor to a company that produces, huge amounts of mushroom for the market. But ferns themselves can be used for medicine, including the ostrich fern, the fiddlehead that we were talking about. It has all kinds of interesting compounds in there. So, for example, ectosterones that are found in some plants, but it's a compound that is used by athletes to increase their production of testosterone, and is a non-steroidal way to actually benefit their muscle building, for example.
Okay, now, so I'd love to go through some of these therapeutic ferns and how people can find them in their health food store. But let's go back to ferns being primitive, because I'm being the orchid lover and orchid snob and that I am, once there's some wonderful phrase, once you get into, I think the saying is, you can get off wine, women, and cars, but once you're stuck on orchids, that's it. And
Well,
then,
it might surprise you. We're up at the 55th latitude up here. Cold winters goes to 40 below. And we have 23 native orchids. So they're not just tropical, right? They're everywhere around the world as well. So, yeah, we'll talk about that when the book comes out. We'll have another discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Well, don't get me started on orchids. We'll never stop. We're supposed to be talking about ferns.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the ferns, because again, I know that ferns had been around since the time of the dinosaurs. You said the dinosaurs munched on ferns, but then you said the ferns predated the dinosaurs.
Yeah,
So
they go back 300 to 400 million years. They were part of the, they basically evolved, they believe, somehow from the algae that was growing in fresh waters and then tried to find a way to come onto land. And so they, like mushrooms, like lichens that do the same thing, they had to find a way to adapt to their environments. And they've been very successful. It is surprising that in North America, very little fern medicine is practiced, although around the world, 80% of the people on the planet use natural products, and ferns have been used forever for, particularly for bone knitting. In fact, one of the most well-known ferns of the traditional Chinese medicine, Dryopteris, is called the bone knitter, and has double-blind, placebo-controlled human clinical trials showing its efficacy for, repairing fractures, preventing osteoporosis, dealing with osteoarthritis. All of those kind of conditions are well proven, and it's been used for thousands of years.
If someone was listening to the broadcast and thought, gosh, I need to strengthen my bones, where could they find, under what scientific name or what herbal name could they find the fern medicine to heal bones?
Dryopteris. Dry, the Dryopteris.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, and they would go to a traditional Chinese herbalist who would get in the, pull out the drawer and bring out these these fern roots and tell you how to decoct them, to boil them and drink the tea. And it wouldn't be that hard to do. The herbalist may decide to include a few more herbs in there that are supplemental and beneficial as well. For example, horsetail, we know well, is rich in silica, which is an important part of preventing osteoporosis, particularly in premenstrual and menstrual women. So, yeah, very, very critical. Yeah.
But her horsetail is not a fern.
It is not.
It's
No, no.
not a fern.
No, but it's rich in silica, organic silica. Yes, exactly.
Okay, so when we talk about the energetic signatures of plants and their therapeutic value, so what do you think is the value of taking these ferns that have been around 300 to 400 million years for our healing? Are they just really good at helping us adapt, or what is it in the energy of that, do you think?
And that's a great question. I was very fortunate to connect with a woman in New Zealand who actually has produced a variety of fern essences, just like you would do flower essences, right? And a lot of them have to do with the reconnection of, particularly development of connectedness between the chakras, like particularly the root chakras. It is a basic, it has an energetics that ground us, that keep us here on the planet. It's not like orchids are kind of more aerial, they're more etheric, and the ferns are much more grounded.
I love that you explained that. Yeah, because some of the orchid essences will open up like your 26th chakra, right?
Exactly.
Way up there. Whereas ferns are like, be here now, be here forever. So,
Exactly. And they've been used traditionally, the homeopathy. I mean, homeopathy's made great use of some of the ferns over time. One of the ones, like I was in an old farm, like an old pharmacy about 30 years ago. And on the shelf there for a dollar, they were selling off. I bought a couple of male fern oleo resins, little bottles. I have a picture of in the book. And these were used for worms, for intestinal parasites, including tapeworm, and in small doses. I mean, this is toxic, right? This is a very powerful ingredient. But ancient peoples used to use that. And in fact, I wrote a book about 10 years ago with Dr. David Young and myself and a Cree healer from Northern Alberta called Russell Willier. We wrote a book called A Cree Healer and His Medicine Bundle, and he shared his 62 plants that he used for traditional medicine, which was amazing because we did a conference and we invited 32 healers from North America to see if there was a respectful way in order to preserve their knowledge. And 30 of them said no, they'd rather take it to the grave. But Russell actually said he would like to share, and so this book came about. And one of the plants in there is a fern that he used to call it the fat fern. And I said, Russell, what does that mean? He said, when people are losing weight, when they're emaciated, when they can't get enough energy, we would take the green inside of the rhizome of the root and make a tea, and they drink it, and they'd start to gain weight. And I thought about it, and I said, oh yeah, they were using it to kill parasites, because parasites will actually debilitate you of energy. And so that's one of the sword ferns, and that's how he used it.
Fascinating. And you mentioned the lady from New Zealand who is making essences from ferns. What is the name of the fern essence line? Do you remember?
Yes, let me think about that. I can get that, if I think about it very quickly here. What was that? I got her name right here. It's right in the front of the book. She was really, really, it was very, very kind of her. I wrote her and thanked her. Her name is Franchelle Ofsoke-Weiber, Weiber. And she has a whole line. If you just punch in New Zealand flower essences, she does moss essences and she does fern essences. And she was very kind to allow me to publish her work. And I'm hoping we bump into each other in New Zealand. I'm hoping so.
Yeah, and there's so many wonderful healers who are making, in essence, flower essences, not only from flowers or orchids, but from ferns and mosses. And then I love that you talked about some of the tree resins that are used in homeopathy, which can be very, very powerful. And with that, let's take a break and listen to a message from one of our commercial sponsors. My name is Katherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer. We're listening to Robert Dale Rogers, who's only published over 60 books in his 15 over 50 years as an herbalist. We'll be right back.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Robert Dale Rogers, author of The Fern Pharmacy. So in my garden, I mostly raise flowers. I'm all about flowers, love my flowers. I always joke, that's why God made grocery stores. A lot of gardeners would totally disagree with me. I have raised kale and spinach and, you know, useful and parsley and rosemary and herbs and all that. But I'm all about my flowers. I've never ever thought of eating my ferns. So are ferns edible or medicinal?
They're both. Let food be your medicine and medicine your food. The ostrich fern we talked about is a choice edible and probably the most well-known. But a bracken fern, for example, is widely utilized in Japan. They prepare it in Korea. They prepare it in a particular manner to avoid some of the toxicity. It has to do a certain cooking. In fact, I was in your town, Atlanta, last fall, and I went to an upscale Korean restaurant, you know, where they have the little robots that bring your meal to you, you know, and whatever. And I had bracken fern, enjoyed it quite well with a group of friends. I was down talking about medicinal mushrooms, and yeah, it was really good and tasty. So many ferns edible, particularly the aerial parts. There's very few of them that would cause you problems if it's cooked, if they're prepared properly.
So are any ferns toxic?
Oh yeah, male fern is very toxic. I mean, you very, very distinctly have to be very careful. I wouldn't eat it, particularly, and the oleoresin that's from the root. As I mentioned, used for parasites, and you have to be careful not to combine it like they used to in the old days with castor oil. You need a prep, and then you need to make sure that you eliminate those parasites as quickly as possible. So, yeah.
So if somebody's listening to this and go, well, gosh, I'm like Catherine, I've had ferns for decades in my garden, how do you know what ferns are toxic and what are okay to eat?
Well, just get the book. I mean,
Good
basically,
answer.
I mean, self-serving answer. But, basically, there's very one of the reasons why I wrote this book, and I was very a good friend of mine, Matthew Wood, who is a well-known herbalist. We just finished a book on the immune system that took us 3 years. But he mentioned that he was really pleased that a book like this was coming out because the only plant fern he knew about was Osmunda, which is one of the ferns that is used for lumbago and things like that, like neuritis and things. And so he's really pleased that it came out. And yeah, I really believe that people need to appreciate how a lot of these ferns contain compounds that are extremely useful. When I was in South America, I lived in Peru for 82, 84. And they have a fern there that they use for vitiligo, for the repigmentation of skin. And you can buy now over the counter something called fern block that is useful for just about every skin disorder, including psoriasis, psoriatic arthritis, blah, 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 et cetera. And so that particular fern is has been well known and is now part of in the medical world, and it's also useful for autoimmune conditions. So that's a very valuable fern that has been well researched and is available to us both prescription and over the counter as a cream. Yeah.
So, and that's fern block.
Fern block, yes.
Fern
Yeah.
block. So there's sunblock and then there's fern block.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah, there are a bunch of other extracts I mentioned in the book that are less costly equivalents, more cost effective. And another one is called HelioCare,
Yes,
so
right.
protecting from your skin problems, exactly. And there's lots of double blind studies showing that there's real improvement from this fern taken internally for performance. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the ectosterones that actually help build muscle mass and increase free testosterone. So that's another way that the ferns are beneficial for health and well-being.
Okay, fantastic. And here at the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio, I have had the pleasure and honor of interviewing Matthew Wood, who's another famous herbalist, also author of many books. So let's get down into the fern gritty of it. What are some commonly known ferns and their uses?
Well, that's, gee, I don't know where it's like picking your favorite child, is it not a bit, Yeah, I would say Dryopteris is my favorite with regards to bone health. I also think some of the other ferns that really be I like a lot are the Phlebodium, which is the HelioCare or the sunblock fern block fern, which not only, is useful for reducing oxidative stress and inflammation in the body, but it also helps to provide the and prevent the muscle damage that really is inherent in athletes who overdo it. This idea that you have to no pain, no gain, that's not true. That's really not true. Like that's an old myth. And so that's not something that you want to think about. But I think my favorite goes back to fiddleheads, to those. I mean, there's a compound in the ostrich fern that has been shown in at least in vivo in animal studies to have a compound that is anti-anxiety. That is, and it also inhibits some of the histamine release that is associated with allergies, mast cell production, and things of that nature. And it's also very, very useful for antimicrobial, antibacterial. I mean, one of the things that I found about ferns in general, there are a number of them have compounds that help to act synergistically with antibiotics that are no longer effective for a lot of the drug-resistant strains that are out there, the major six that really cause hundreds of thousands of people a year die because the antibiotics no longer work. And so there are compounds in these that are synergistic with some of the less effective antibiotics, and in some cases make them 30 or 60 times more potent
Wow.
just by being synergistic. And that reminds me of in Germany, they have a long tradition of combining pharmaceutical drugs with natural herbs in a selective manner with way more efficacy and less side effects. And so this is the kind of thing that really interests me. And also interests me too, that a number of compounds in ferns actually are able to alleviate a lot of the side effects associated with chemotherapy and actually not only reduce the side effects, but actually increase longevity. And that's a long-standing issue with myself. I was a clinical professor in family medicine for about 12 years, and oncologists will often tell their chemotherapy patients that they should take no supplement if they're doing chemo. And that is scientifically incorrect. That is not true at all. You either are paying attention to science or you're not. And the way they're trained is not rational at all. In fact, medicinal mushrooms also taken during chemo and after have shown, reduced side effects and encouraged longevity. And so, so some of the ferns do that as well.
Now, if someone is listening to this broadcast, Robert Dale Rogers, and they wanted to use ferns therapeutically, what herb companies in the Western world would you recommend? I personally like Herb Farm, and that's herb, new word, farm, PharM. And then I'm a raving fan of the alchemical herbs at alchemy.com, and that's ALKEMI, and they have another website, ALQEMI, not to be confusing, but they're alchemically produced. So where can people find ferns that are can be used naturally for therapeutic purposes?
You can't.
You can't.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Herb Farm. I knew Ed Smith and Sarah from way back. Like, I've been an herbalist for 50 years, so I remember when that company started, and they produce an excellent product. I highly recommend it for all kinds of things. But there are no fern products on that are actually tinctured or made available by some of the big commercial companies as yet.
As yet. So, and why is that? Because, I mean, gosh, ferns are everywhere, so there's a ready supply of ferns.
Well,
So
I think it's an education thing. I really believe when I started looking at lichens, my last book was Medicinal Lichens. There's not really a lot of products out there, and it's simply because the herbal industry and the supplement industry has been more focused basically on plants, flowering plants, and that's been the bias. But I think that's going to change. I mean, there is now a company in California that specializes in reindeer moss, which actually is a lichen, but they now offer it as a supplement. So things are slowly changing, right?
But you mentioned that if you wanted to purchase Dioptris, which is for helpful for bones, you'd have to go to a Chinese herbalist. So are there Chinese herbalists who make remedies from ferns?
Well, they usually make formulas, right? They'll take the Dioptris and a few other herbs and put it together and tell you how to prepare it. But also Ayurvedic physicians also are well acquainted with some ferns, and they use them as well. So depending on who your herbalist is and who your naturopath is, they can assist you with pointing you in the right direction for supply. But you can't go in a health food store and just pull a bottle off the shelf yet, which, you know, it's too bad, really.
Yeah, I've never seen fern medicine at any health food store that I've been in.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I know. But it's coming. It's going to come. I mean, it's just like lichens, like Usnea, for example. Usnea is well known now. You can buy that in any health food store, and it's a lichen, and it was traditionally used, and now it's got all kinds of research. And so part of why I wrote the book was not just to talk to the lay person and people that are interested in plant medicine, but to researchers that we can actually look at some of these as opportunities for investigating and used in areas that are really needed, particularly in chronic disease that is becoming rampant. And you know, we don't need to rely on pharmaceuticals for all our answers, that's for sure.
Yes. Now, you mentioned that ferns are used in Ayurvedic medicine. So are there any Ayurvedic remedies that contain herbs?
Not
ferns.
Yeah. Nothing that you can buy off the shelf either. No, not yet. And you know, we have a big history. Like I said, I lived a few years in South America, and you can go to the street markets and you can buy all these things, right? And around the world, you can go to your local corner herb market and you'll be able to get these products. But in North America, not yet. And I would say in Europe in general, not yet either.
Okay, fascinating. Now, we started this interview by you talking about being a fern entrepreneur, and you would sell huge poundage of fiddlehead ferns. So what are fiddlehead ferns good for?
Oh, they're so good for so many things. I mean, that's getting you started about orchids, if I talk about fiddlehead ferns. They are actually very useful for so many purposes. They basically contain compounds. And in fact, they were used by indigenous people for medicine as well, not just for food. You know, they would consume the raw, one of the groups in northern British Columbia, they would take the raw ferns and they combine them with grease, usually bear grease, and take those in the spring. And they would, you know, other indigenous hunters would think that if they actually ate the fiddleheads, it would mask their scent so that when they went out to hunt, that the animals would not be aware that they were out there. But again, they're a choice edible. And I would say, you know, they kind of taste like asparagus with broccoli, a little bit artichoke-y kind of a flavor in there. But some of the things that they can be very useful for is lowering blood sugar. I mean, we have an epidemic, a pandemic of type 2 diabetes in this country, in this continent. And, you know, it possesses also has some antiviral components. It has antifungal, antibacterial properties. And particularly one compound has been found extremely useful both on its own and synergistically for nasopharyngeal cancers, you know, nose cancers. Mm-hmm. They found that when they're combined together with standard treatment, they can be very good for inhibiting the migration of those problems. Also good for the H1N1 influenza virus. Ostrich ferns can be used for that manner as well. One study I really like, they're investigating that there's a compound in ostrich ferns for glioblastoma, brain cancers. Mm-hmm. So it's endless, really. I mean, that's just one particular fern that we could look at in a lot of cases. In fact, in veterinary medicine, a couple of ferns are used for parasites, like I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So Robert Rogers, I have a question for you. I'd love to hear where you do your research. So just recently, I interviewed a gentleman, a master acupuncturist, and we did a show explaining how acupuncture works. And it was quite interesting because I had people attacking this gentleman, like, you know, where do you get your information type thing? So I know you've published more than 60 books. Where do you do your research about the medicinal effects of ferns? And who does this kind of research?
Right. Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, I started off my career. I ended up with a Bachelor of Science in Botany. And the next year, I found myself on a little acreage up in northern Alberta, and I couldn't name one plant. There was not one. This is the early 70s. There was not any information on one plant up there. And so I've spent the last 50 years, the first 30 for sure, researching plants of the boreal forest, both mushrooms and plants, and wrote a number of books on those. And I was introduced to ferns by an indigenous healer up that way. But most of my studies and research goes, I have access to the university libraries because I have had a clinical practice and an adjunct professor. So that was one source of information. I still also went to some of my friends, Nancy Turner is a famous ethnobotanist from British Columbia. And she's researched a lot of the traditional uses of ferns by people of that region. And so I've accessed her information. But most of the research, it's interesting, I would say 60% of the information is due to Korean, Japanese, and Chinese researchers. They have gone a deep dive, both they took the traditional uses and then they decided, they found out the chemistry and then they found out, specific constituents and did double blind trials with those. You know, we're not really fans of double blind studies in North America on plant medicines, but we don't mind subjecting people to chemicals in a pharmaceutical trial. I mean, it's so ridiculous, you know, like it's somehow unethical to do it with plant medicine. Don't get me started on that.
Don't even get me started, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate you sharing for our audience where you do your research, and it makes sense that the Chinese, the Japanese, And the Koreans would be some of the forerunners, right? In doing that research, right?
Exactly.
So, what are some of the interesting healing compounds that you've been writing about in ferns?
Oh boy. That's, I mean, a specific compound? You mean something, name a particular compound?
Yes, that are especially helpful that inventors and entrepreneurs. So hopefully this interview will inspire an inventor and entrepreneur to bring
Right.
fern medicine to the Western world.
Yeah, well, one of the ones that comes up time and again in ferns is abietic acid, ABETIC, abietic acid. And so that particular compound is found in numerous ferns, and it has been found very useful against methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, which, as we know, is people are losing limbs and dying from this nasty drug-resistant strain, and it's been found to be extremely active. We need to be looking at some of these compounds that really can get us out of this dilemma. Big pharma really isn't reinvesting in new antibiotics. They're more interested in making money from lifestyle drugs. And so there is a, they've really about 30 years ago, they stopped, that's about the last year that they really deeply invested in antibiotics. And it's too bad because we need them. It's really, I guess it's a role that government should play on some level. But then again, you know, look at the case of what's going on with CDC and your part of the world and the politics of that. I mean, don't get me started on that
Yeah, we
either.
won't go down that rabbit hole. So,
Oh my goodness, yeah.
as a fern expert and someone with more than 50 years experience in herbalism, if you were going to recommend people to make compounds from ferns, what for medicinal purposes, what compounds would you recommend they focus on?
Ah, well, that's a great question. So here we get into the dilemma between a herbalist and perhaps a pharmacist. As an herbalist, I really believe the whole plant, the whole fern,
Yes.
has a number of compounds that balance each other. So you may get the active ingredient, maybe in there or a couple of them, but they're also balanced with something that prevents the action from going too far. That's part, one of the reasons why sometimes there's side effects with a particular molecule, right? And so I and even, you know, when you look in the health food stores, some herbal products will emphasize a particular ingredient, say 4% of echinococides, for example, with echinacea. Well, that's not even the active part of echinacea. That's how the factories, the manufacturers, that's how they measure the content of the root they buy from a grower. It has nothing to do with this active activity. So I'm not a real fan of, I am a fan of full spectrum herbal products. I'm not a real fan of isolated compounds.
Right, spoken like a true herbalist, not the derivative, but the whole thing.
Yeah, I like the whole thing.
The whole
Yeah.
thing. Yeah, most true herbalists would agree with that. So, Robert Dale Rogers, any final thoughts for our audience?
Gee, our time went fast, did it not? Yeah. I would just say, you know, if you're interested, get the book or go to your library. Your libraries will probably have it. It's just coming out now. It's just if you go to Amazon, you'll notice that it's you can pre-order. It's coming out this week. And just enjoy it. If you like ferns, check it out. You may find in there something that's local in your neighborhood that you've always wondered about. Is that fern good for something? My book has good pictures, and I thank the people who donated those to them, good friends of mine. But really, there are in the index, there in the bibliography, there is also a resource area where you can find some of the books on fern photos, so people can identify them properly. And I think that's important. Yeah.
You've been listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out about me at catherinekerrigan.com and on unlimitedenergynow.com. While you're there, sign up for my newsletter, which is available for free on Substack. Our guest today, Robert Dale Rogers, published more than 60 books. And we've been talking about his new book, The Fern Pharmacy, Indigenous Wisdom and Modern Pharmacology. And you can find out more about Robert Dale Rogers and his wonderful work at selfhealingdistributing.com. And remember, there's a whole world of plants that are here to heal us and bring us to wholeness naturally. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural with the Natural Healing Show.